Watkins. Will he get his shot away? It's a hurry. Oh, it looked like a timely tackle, but John Brooks thinks otherwise and has given Aston Villa a penalty and a yellow card. Ollie Watkins has put it wide. That is a horrible miss from Watkins, and you'd certainly expect better from him because normally he tucks them away. Bailey. Aston Villa keeping this alive. Jones in the way. Douglas Luiz with an inviting cross. And they have the lead. Jacob Ramsey. In his 100th game for Villa. Puts them in front after all. Minutes after Ollie Watkins missed a penalty. Ramsey has tucked it away. And Villa lead at Anfield as they chase Europe.
Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. Paul, your host, joined by Spud. Rhino and Tess laid out with injuries tonight. I think you can figure out why we got this song on. It's Europe. It's the final countdown as we look forward to the last game of the season. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. We'll do what we can, mate. Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. It's the end of the season. We've got a couple of injuries. You'll have to put up with Spud and I. How are we, mate?
Very good, mate. Very good. How are you?
Mate, I'm chipper. It's 9.30. What is it? 9.30, 7.30 your time in WA. Life is good. It's a Friday night. So let's get right into it, bud. And you are the number one loved person on the podcast. So
it's a team effort, mate. We're nothing without each other, mate.
Mate, I tell you, what a huge... I mean, a lot of shows would have already covered it, but what a magnificent point against Liverpool. It could have been so much more, but we'll take that point because that point gives us a chance at Europe. I was, you know, genuinely chuffed that we just put in such a good... For me, we put in such a great effort, I thought. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that point is going to hopefully be invaluable now.
Oh, man, to be fair, the vast majority of the overriding sense was from most of the Villa fans was that it was a good point. You're going to see your odd few negative points here and there, as we know. But, no, absolutely. I mean, I was super proud of that, man. Look, they probably could have won it in the end, but Anfield is a tough, tough place to go to. So to take a point, just, for 70 minutes, it looked like we were going to get the win, though. But, look, at the end, you'd have to be fair and say Liverpool are good value for a point as well. And I think a point was a fair result because Villa were brilliant in the first half. Liverpool were very good in the second half. But Villa showed two sides of the coin, you know. We showed that we can play football, but we can also dig deep, you know. And I think that's something we didn't really show before. You know, we could never play two sides of the game, until Emery obviously took over. So I think that's a huge development in itself, you know, because those two performances, the first and second half, were completely different from us,
100%. And look, you only even have to forget this season for a moment. You only have to look back at the last few seasons and, you know, no lead was safe for us. We could be 1-2, you know, we could be whatever up and you always panic. But I wasn't panicking in this game. I knew Liverpool would come at us, but I knew we'd go at them as well. And we did. We really did.
I'll tell you what, though, I just love him so much, you know. We do our previews and everyone does the previews and, you know, you can only give your opinion at the end of the day, as soon as I seen that he put Matty Cash in there, I was like, yeah, of course he has. Why wouldn't you see that, you know? Because, it made so much sense when you see it on paper. I was convinced it'd be just the same back five, you know? And then you look at Luca Dean, he's like, yeah, of course, it all makes sense. The one that caught me, though, I must say, is I thought, absolutely, McGinn was nailed on. I knew Kamara had come back in, but it was nailed on. McGinn's going to play on the right side. Excellent. Yep. Bailey's playing on the right wing, and McGinn's up as the number 10. Rhino predicted that Bailey would start, but we all thought if he did start, it'd be up with Watkins, but not.
Supporting Watkins.
Excellent. McGinn's playing as the number 10 for the first half. Just brilliant. Variety. And sorry, Paul. Yeah, just a variety.
No, I was just going to say, that's why Emery is Emery and we are on a podcast, mate.
Yeah. Other coaches that are coaching the teams over the years as well, you know what I mean? You could predict their starting lineup easily a lot of the time. Just some of the stuff he does.
Imagine what he's going to do. Imagine what he's going to do with a bigger, deeper
a squad that can be more varied. It's going to be unbelievable.
Just, I just take so much pleasure in watching him and trying to take the pick out of his teams, you know, pick the bones out of his teams and watch what they're doing. And it's just amazing to have him as the coach. Like, I just love watching him, seeing how he's trying. And as you said, wait till he gets a few of his own players. Just incredible.
Well, I've got my first question for you. It's a tough one, and I'm glad it's you who's going to answer this, because you'll get straight down to it, even though it's going to be tough. You can only keep three players from this current squad going forward. You can only keep three. Who would they be and why? I told you I was going to give you a tough one.
Oh, that's a tough one. Martinez, because at this moment in time, he's irreplaceable. Like, there's a couple of keepers that are probably on par with him at the moment for the season they've had. Like, Alisson's been brilliant, all that, but we're never signing Alisson. For us, for Villa, he's absolutely irreplaceable. Like, there's no way we'd be able to sign the player it would take to replace him, if you get what I'm saying. He's irreplaceable 100%. For Villa. Yeah. So Martinez has to be there.
Can I stop you there then?
Yeah.
100% concur. And for a keeper, he's still really young. So, yep, I go Martinez for sure. I had him on my list.
Douglas Luiz. I've been a big fan. Tess has been a big fan a long, long time. I think Douglas Luiz's ceiling is just so high. I just think he's an incredible footballer, and he's just getting better and better. I thought he developed naturally himself. He had a really good season without really being coached. He's come through it rough with Smith and Gerrard. Not really played in their best position. Smith obviously seen something in him, though, because Smith tried to do what Emery had. He just doesn't have the technical nose that Emery has to get the best out of him. You see him now under a coach team. When was the last time that you turned around and said Dougie didn't play well? He's been outstanding. I think going forward, Douglas Luiz, I think he's going to be a phenomenal footballer. And
Love it.
This is where it gets tough. It's a toss up between two for me, and I know I'll have to make the decision, and I actually can't believe I'm saying this myself, because I thought this wouldn't have been one of my answers 6 months ago. I think John McGinn has become irreplaceable, to be honest.
Yeah, I love it.
It's a toss up between McGinn and Kamara for me.
This is what I love about the podcast, because I posed that question, and for listeners, it was without any notice whatsoever. We like to do this to each other. I've gone Martinez for sure. Yeah. I totally agree. Might surprise you with a couple of the others. I'm going to go Ramsey, because I think his ceiling, very much like what you're saying about Luiz, I think his ceiling is just starting to be realised. I'd have to have him. And he's what, 21?
21, yeah. He's another one you could definitely have 100%. Yeah, he's just...
And there might be one that you might be surprised with here. And this is a ridiculous one, and no one will ever listen to the podcast after I say this. But I'm talking I'm talking long term. I'm not talking just, you know, right now, this is it, you know, for this season. But I'm actually thinking, and hear me out on this, I'm actually thinking Duran. And because I can just see what he could become in years to go. If we're talking about three players we have to keep out of this squad, knowing that we're going to build on it, I'm actually going to put Duran in there, because I think his ceiling, you know, we bought him for 12 million for a reason. Loan him out for a few years. And how often do these players come back to us? They have a great couple of seasons. We sell them for a fortune. So, yeah, I knew that one would get you, but I'm going Duran.
I tell you, like, the raw ingredients that young fella has is really good. And, like, Emery is starting to kind of trust him a bit more, giving him more minutes in more important games.
Yeah.
I've said all along, I do see him go on loan next year, and I think it would be a smart move for all involved. I think it would be good for his career, and that's something I think that was probably well decided long before he ever landed in Birmingham, you know?
Yeah, he knew that. He knew that for sure.
And they would have said to his family, to his agent, look, come to us. He can be an extra number with us. He can, our liaisons will get him settled in the country. He'll get to know his teammates, get him settled in the UK, and then we'll send him out for a year. It happens a lot if you listen to, like... Yep. Ben Foster podcast. I listened to a lot of that, and Ben Foster talks a lot about the loans he had. And he, when he signed for Man United first, before he ever put on a Man United jersey, they told him he'd be moving to Watford before he ever signed in the dotted line, you know. So these things do happen in your development. So, yeah, I think he has all the raw ingredients. I haven't seen enough from yet, from me personally, to say I think that he's going to be absolutely nail on for us for the rest of the year or for the rest of his career. But there's definitely potential there. But just with age bracket, I really like Kamara. I just worry, a bit worried about his injuries a little bit. Something that has never really played a part in his career before he came to Villa either, which is a bit weird. Like he's not a player who missed games for Marseille at all. Like, but John McGinn, like it's just like a whole new footballer. John McGinn is the player to me now that when I seen him in the Championship, I thought he would become, but he never quite got there for me personally. I even went as far as before calling him the most overrated player we had anymore because I rated him that highly and he just went so far off the boil. But boy, has he proved me wrong, you know?
I think it's like anything, isn't it, mate? You're given confidence in something and confidence is such a huge thing, and it's great to see that he just seems happy. And yeah, I think... And this is what I don't understand about workplaces that thrive on fear, whether it's a football workplace or, you know, the industries we work in. Because, you know, you make me happy at work, I'm going to give you so much more. I can promise you that.
And you've seen, 100%, yeah. And you see John McGinn's interview, like, and he was like, oh, I thought when Emery came in that because my name wasn't Juan McGinn, I'd be out the door. And he was like... and then Emery asked him what his best position was. He says, anywhere, just not on the bench. And then they were interviewing Emery. And Emery said that when I first came, I wasn't sure about him at all.
Yes, that's right.
And now he goes, no, I'm 100% sure about him. And if you watch him, like, the first fella that has to fill in any position, completely trust McGinn now. See, he dropped in at left back for the other day when Mourinho got off injured until they moved down over there. He's played number 10 for him. He's played in the right. He's played as the holding midfielder. And the thing is, like, he's giving 8 or 9 out of 10s, like, when he's playing there in every position. And there'll be a place in that 11 for him week in, week out if he keeps up this form. It doesn't matter who comes in the door, because Emery will love a player like that where he
can. Nah, totally agree. Mate, I just want to... I don't really want to touch on the review of the Liverpool game too much, other than to say, you know, this is definitely the kind of games we would have lost in years gone by. And the fact that so many supporters, such as ourselves, were, I won't say confident, but were looking forward to the game. I didn't have any trepidation going into the game. I was really looking forward to a good contest. And that's what we want from Villa over the next few years, is every game we go into with a chance. And that hasn't been the case in years.
Are you like, you'd fear no team now, would you? Like, I mean, I'm not saying we'll beat every team, but you'd fear no team. Like, you know that there'll be a game plan, and even if we go down, it'll be going down fighting, you know?
Yeah, like, we're going to have our moments, aren't we? We're going to have our moments.
Yeah, and, like, you're 100% right. There's absolutely no question that we would have lost that game 2-1 before. Like, just, yeah. It's brilliant to see, like.
We'll look forward to the Brighton game towards the end of the pod, but let's go into some listeners' questions as well. And, look, first of all, for the listeners, that question I asked, in our current squad, please don't name any more than 3. I want your 3 who you think must stay over the next few years at Villa. That would be really good. So if you want to put that up on, we'll put that up on Aussie Villains, at Aussie Villains. Name 3 players in the current squad that are a must keep. Or if you've just listened to the podcast, you can get on Aussie Villains and post it up yourself. So you listen to the pod, here's my answers. So that'd be great. I think that'll get a lot of conversations going. Yeah. So, Spud, we'll go in saying that. If we're going to be on Aussie Villains, we might as well go and have a look at some of the questions
we've got as well. Let's do it. This is my favourite segment of the whole podcast, usually. Some of the questions we get are just... All the questions we get are fantastic.
Absolutely. Whether they're through Facebook or Twitter. So, Smithy1874, long-time listener, contributor every week. He says, I was at Bournemouth at the start of the season and I'll be at Villa Park at the end. I am so glad that Unai is our manager, because that first game under Slippy was shocking. Question for us, and good luck. I hope you have an absolute ball there, Smithy, as well. Question, what's been your highs and lows? That game was my low. The Newcastle at home was my high. I'll start on this one, mate, because... my high... Oh, for me, it was probably the first win against Manchester United, because or the win against Manchester United, because I started to see, for me, I thought something different was going to happen, and that was my high. There's so many others. I suppose I'm cheating myself here, but no, probably the signing of Emery in the end. Pardon me. Sorry, guys. That is not COVID. That is a sneeze. And the low had to be that first 12 weeks. It was just, we went from so much, oh, I don't know, just hoping and wishing at the start of the season. And those first 12 weeks were just horrendous, mate. So over to you.
Yeah, I'm going to be more like kind of specific and put mine stuff, because I think that's kind of where he was gearing towards.
Oh, yeah, I was going to hear that.
I love your answers, because that covers pretty much how I feel, you know. But if I was going to be more pinpointing games, well, actually, one of the lowest points for me, I thought, was under Steven Gerrard, and it's probably a game that people forget about because so much has gone on since then. Like, a lot of people are going to say the Fulham, like, lost blah, 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 and Bournemouth again is another one. But for me, it was that 3-1 loss to Crystal Palace. We were so bad. Like, and I think we scored actually after 7 or 8 minutes. We might have even went 1-0 up. We conceded straight away. And we either conceded straight away to go 1-1, or we conceded straight away to go 2-1 after getting back to 1-1. I can't remember exactly. But we were horrendous. And this was only like probably two or three games in, or maybe 3 or 4 games in. Anyway, I know it was back in Ireland when it was on anyway. So that was still in August. And I remember looking at the setup, and we'd already lost to Bournemouth. And then I was actually at the game the week before, and we scraped the win against Everton. And again, we were pretty poor. Like, and I remember looking at this, and I remember looking at the Palace game and how open we were. And Gerrard looked absolutely lost on the sideline. He didn't know. Patrick Vieira was changing things in game, and you could see the direction that was coming, but there was absolutely zero direction coming from the sideline. And it was then that it really hit me that this man's just out of his depth. You know, I'd been in Villa Park the week before, and I was like, all right, first home game, you know, you give him a chance. And we got the win. But then you watch him against Palace, and yeah, it was really bad. And that's when I really began to worry, like, because I just, this man actually doesn't have a clue from a management style. We have no setup. He has no tactical answers to anything Vieira's doing. And Vieira's doing basic stuff here. Like, he's just switching formations and stuff. And you just, he had no reaction to it. Everything was reactive instead of proactive. And yeah, just, yeah, I really worried me. That was a very low point for me, and it just kind of got worse and worse from there on in. The highest point for me, look, I mean, Emery obviously comes in as the high point, right? But for pinpoint thing, and it's something I think people will get, fact that will get lost in people. For me, one of the highest points of the season was the 4-0 home win against Brentford under Aaron Danks. Now, the reason why that was so important to me is the week before, obviously, all that stuff had happened with Fulham, and we looked we looked like relegation fodder, let's be honest. Even drag going out the door, the club looked dejected. The players couldn't string two passes together. We had no shape. We had no coherence. The players looked terrible. The fans were at each other. Some were saying it was the players. Others were saying it was the management. Just the club was a mess. Like, and next thing, all of a sudden, within 3 days, Gerrard was out the door. Aaron Danks was the caretaker manager. And suddenly these players looked transformed. And they, out of nowhere, they pulled this amazing performance against Brentford. And it was 4-0. And it just, why it meant so much to me was because, like, they reminded me, we're not actually that bad. We don't have any structure. And we're playing against teams that do, you know.
And I remember you saying that, actually. I remember you saying that at the time. And I think we all thought that. But belief. Belief is everything, and it comes down to McGinn. You know, we were talking about McGinn. It was exactly the same thing.
Yeah. I kind of lost belief after that Fulham game, like that, of that run up to that point, because I thought, wow, we're so far out of our depth. We do look like a championship team here, you know. And but it was good. The players just showed us, no, like we have got the ability. We just need to be put in a proper shape and structure. And that's when Emery it was the catalyst for Emery coming in. Obviously, Emery looked at that squad and thought, yeah, I can do something with this squad, you know. And that was it. That was it for the highlight for me. And then it just got higher and higher. But for me, that was the catalyst for me.
Yeah, the actual specific points. Yeah, I love that.
My season changed, yeah.
And that was definitely what where Smithy was coming from. But I was a bit more circumspect there.
Yeah, but you covered it well too, though, Paul, because there is a generalisation too. Because there was, like, we've had high and low moments, but there's been periods. There was bad periods under Gerrard. There was great periods under Unai, you know. So you've covered that perfectly. Like, there's moments, but there's also long periods of success and...
I can't believe it. It feels like, you know, time goes so quickly with pressures of family and money and work and all these things, right? And football's our great escape. This feels like, and I know the World Cup interceded and so forth, this feels like the longest season ever. And it actually feels like three different seasons. It feels like I can't even believe that Gerrard was our manager, our gaffer at one stage, because it doesn't even feel real that period of time.
Yeah. And you're 100% right, because you obviously had the World Cup break as well. So the players went off in the pre-season to Dubai and all that. So it just felt like a whole new season. And because the season was so condensed in the second half, we played a lot of games in that second half of the season. So it does feel like a complete separate season, well, you know?
I was watching a Chelsea game this morning, and seriously, I can't believe they only lost by 3 goals, which is really scary with them spending, what, over $500,000 or more, even more than that. But the one thing I noticed, we're talking about belief, the players just looked like they just did not care. But since when I think about the same period that we changed managers, I believe Chelsea might be the third or fourth worst performing club. They would actually be just above relegation now if the season had continued in that way. So that what an unbelievable year it's been for so many clubs.
That's actually a brilliant segue, Paul, because a good friend of mine, Patrick Doyle, big Villa fan, he's from my hometown back in Ireland.
Now, I don't know. I did that segue was a fluke.
Yeah, that's just me bringing in. I told Paul earlier I had questions from him because he said he had a few for me that he wasn't going to tell me till on air. So, and I said I have a couple for him. So this is from Patrick Doyle, big Villa fan, big supporter of the pod. So he says, more of a talking point than a question. On Chelsea, is Lampard playing as many kids as he can just so he can claim the future that he brought them through? It's laughable.
Oh, I mean, there's probably an element of truth to that. I think that he's probably trying to do the best thing he can do for some of these guys. He might have the remit to give these guys minutes to sell them, because I think they're going to have to really, and they know they're going to have to sell a lot of players on the money they've spent. The league's made no bones about the money that Chelsea spent. They're not going to be in a position to be playing. They're not obviously going to be playing in Europe. A lot of income's going to be gone there. We know a lot of their issues. I think they're putting them out on the... For me, I don't think it's so much about him saying, hey, I brought them through. I think it's about more window shopping or shopping them out for the rest of Europe.
It's true. I think the point too, Paz, trying to make is like that. Like the talent they have, yet they're playing like Gallagher and all them, you know. It's Lampard's terrible. Like, I mean, that Chelsea team is really bad. Like, and Pochettino has some job in his hands. Like, they have 34 registered first teamers now. Like, he's not going to work with 34. So where do you start shipping these players there? These players are the one who want to get out of there. They've put some of these players on 8-year contracts. Like, it's the mismanagement. Like, on a top level, has just been crazy, man.
And I agree with you. And this is what I'm finding really funny when people are saying, well, you know, they've got the money. I can see Chelsea climbing back pretty quickly. But, you know, money does talk. But in a league where a lot, you know, this is very different to, you know, like Scotland, where there's one or two teams, Spain, three, you know, Italy, maybe five or six. But this league has...
There's a lot of moving.
Almost passion. Every club's got money, right?
Every club's got money, and every club in the top 10 has serious coaches. Like, you know, like Brighton don't have the best money, but they have a serious run club and they have a serious coach to put it all together. So at Newcastle, Villa, all have money, structures. You're right. It's not going to be an easy climb, but I think Pochettino's a smart, sensible signing though, but he's going to need to give him time.
Yeah, I mean, but let's be honest, it's not rocket science. I mean, he was been out there and shopped around, and I'm sure people wanted him at Villa, and I would have been happy to. But it's not a... It seems almost like a safe appointment.
Yeah.
For a club that big, you know, to appease a lot of people, it's got to be a name. You'll know more than I do.
Yeah. His record of developing players is pretty good, too.
That's... If that's actually what they want, I don't know if they're that smart the way they've gone about it lately, mate.
I don't think they have a plan, though, Paul, do they? This owner.
No,
like,
that's what I'm saying. I don't even think...
He's playing championship manager, like.
I don't even think the manager's a plan. I think they've looked at the best name that's out there at the moment that they can appease people with.
There's no stops there. It's worrying, like.
But hey, good question. But that's my opinion. I don't think it's about him saying, look, I'm bringing people through. I think it's more about getting people shopped out and can we get a few minutes there and it'll make him a bit more valuable on the market.
And here, Roland in Dask, I hear we're being linked with Harry Maguire. Can you see it happening? I certainly can't. He would be the opposite of what we need. Martial is linked too. Would be a disaster, if true.
I don't think Martial would be a disaster at all. I certainly think he has the ability, especially with someone who'll give him the confidence. I don't see that as a disastrous signing. Harry Maguire, I don't know if any player is a disaster if he becomes a squad player, but if we'd be signing him as a player who's meant to be in the starting lineup, and he can't hold the ball, Emery won't even. I couldn't imagine Emery would be looking at a player like him at all. He just doesn't have the Emery stamp. He doesn't have the ability to hold the ball and creative playing from the back. I'd be shocked if it was an Emery signing.
I'd be very surprised to see Harry Maguire come through the door. Martial, I wouldn't want him. His attitude is shocking. And people say, oh, it wasn't a good fit at United, but he went to Sevilla on loan and he was atrocious over there too.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd be a good signing. There's definitely a talented footballer there though, but no, I understand what Pat is saying. Like, for what the fit we need at the moment, like the links are very strong at the moment. There's a lot of talk of Maguire and Martial, but yeah, I just don't see either.
Maguire would be a disaster. I mean, he's disliked, and I don't want to say this about a person who hasn't really done anything wrong. He's disliked by many of his own supporters, right? And I would be like, I feel it would be a really backward step for us.
You'd be bringing a lot of negative energy. So we've just got away from Mings getting by the crowd.
Yeah.
To bring in someone like who half the crowd are just waiting to pounce on as soon as he makes a mistake. It would just, I just don't see it happening. It's a lot of negative energy around the time. And I'd bring Harry Maguire in personally because... no, I do think the move will do him well. I think he's better than what he's showing at United, but I don't think Villa's the place for him. Having said that, I'd hate to see him at Villa, if you know what I mean.
If you ask me, if it was a different question, would I be excited about Martial coming in? No. He'd be the kind of signing we would have done years ago, and we go, oh, cool, look who we got. But no, he's not the player we need. Would it be a disaster? I mean, only time would tell, but as we get to, hopefully, if we're in Europe next year, you do need a better squad. You need players who can come in. But I think there's, you know, we've got our network. It's growing. We put some stuff out this week. We've got people based in more countries now. You know, some premier scouts there now. I think that we can find better players. The Premier League recycles way too many players who don't deserve, you know, as many chances as they get. They really don't.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and that kind of concludes what I was saying as well. The last part of his question was, you'll probably touch on this anyway, but how many realistic signings can you see happening this summer? Are we really going to kick on from here? I think we need a monster window to compete next year.
Look, I think there's going to be a number. I've said it for a long time, haven't I, in our podcast. I think people will be surprised at how many do come in. But it's not going to be willy-nilly. It's not going to be a Nottingham Forest. It's not going to be a Chelsea where they just sign players because, you know, they needed to sign players. And, oh, that looks good, I'll have him. Oh, that looks good, I'll have him. They will be specific players for specific needs. We've got another question very similar to this one, I believe, from someone about the kind of players we'll need. So I might segue to that one, mate, because it's very similar. And we'll answer both of them together. Sorry, we'll just go to it now. Apologies. So this one, here we go. So this is from Paul Albert, Holtender 02. So it's a very, what's your friend's name?
Patrick Paddile.
Yeah, so both of them got a very similar idea here. His question is, assuming that we do the business on Sunday and qualify for Europe, where do you feel that Mr. Emery will be looking to strengthen for the task at way ahead? So they're similar enough questions that we could probably bracket those.
Yeah.
Do you want to give that a go, mate?
Yeah.
Thanks for the question, Paul, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant question, Pat. Brilliant question, Paul. Thanks for contributing. It's a very important question as well because it's very relevant. Like it is a very important part of the puzzle this summer. You know, the transfer window is vital. Like, I know, Paul, you're very much, we're going to make a lot of signings. I'm more of the belief that is we're going to be making quantity or quality, not quantity. I think there's enough of a squad depth there that if we can buy three really good players to challenge that first 11, then that automatically makes our bench stronger. I'm just making this window on an isolated incident. I'm not talking about January or the following summer. Like, I think the squad is going to evolve over a couple of windows, but I don't see us going hitting 5-6 signings this summer. I'd like to think that we'd make three quality signings. I think that would be where I would probably see most likely. I think we know there's going to be a winger come striker come into play, play the Bailey role, let's say. That's definitely going to happen. I do see a fourth centre back coming in. I definitely see that, and I do think another midfielder will come in because I don't. He wants to play Louise in a certain role, and I don't think he wants to keep having to take McGinn in to replace Kamara if Kamara gets injured. I think a direct replacement for Kamara, maybe not at the same level of quality, but someone who he can comfortably just put in there when Kamara's not there, or to give him a rest. Do you know what I mean? If there's injuries or rest. So they'd be the three I think would be most likely. There's surely going to be a right-back signed as well.
Yeah, I actually think I'll go probably a little bit different way to you. I think there'll be a few more than that, but I agree with you. It's probably my point I was making about Chelsea and the others. I think it'll be more quality, but I think, you know, from the very first moment he's come in, he knows the players he wants. He knows the style he wants.
Yeah.
And that's going to be players all over the pitch that are comfortable on the ball.
Yeah.
That's very obvious. He's definitely not going to have a hoofer, which I think Harry Maguire would be. I think he'd be a hoofer.
Yeah.
And so he's not going to sign someone like that. There's no way in the world he is going to sign players that don't fit him. So Maguire's a name, right? And I'm not picking on Maguire. He's a name, and he's a name that's either in infamy or he's played in, you know, for England and so forth. Emery is not going to sign names. He's going to sign the right player for the right positions. And we definitely, definitely need, like almost every club in the world, we have to sign another striker or two, at least another one, because Duran, as I said, long-term is a solution, but he's not the solution for the next year or two.
He's not there yet, yeah. He needs to play more football at a high level.
And that's probably where the pundits and supporters have gone, oh, Martial, because it's a simple name. He's known in the Premier League. He's played for a big club. But that, I don't think Emery is a... I don't think he's at all enamoured with players' names. It's, can this guy do the job for me? So that's why I think Martial's no chance of being signed by us. The only way that would be was if the owners and everything say, well, Steph Emery, this is who we're signing because he's who we want. He's going to sign jerseys. And I just don't think that's what Emery signed for.
Yeah, as I said the other day at the moment, because there was other links as well. We were linked to Rodrigo from Leeds and things like that. And it wouldn't be a bad sign. He's 32. But I just said, like, at the moment, I think at this point now, we've like been linked to any player who's ever even went on a package holiday to Spain, you know? Like we're being linked to every player, like. But you're right. I do see things I think the Giovanni Lo Celso link is. I would believe that. Yep. Like he had some. He played a lot of good football for Emery under Villarreal on loan from Spurs. I wouldn't be surprised if there was something in that. But it's kind of even hard to keep track now of who we're being linked to, because we're being linked to absolutely everyone. Which is a good thing, because it means that the media are taking notice of us. The club is moving forward. You know, we're now being linked to club to players the way that Arsenal and United and all them have been for the last few years. Us in Newcastle are just being linked to everybody now, you know. So that's a sign the club is moving forward. But the way our club do business, I don't think that half of those links are any truth in them at all. I said there'll probably be three coming, but then I remembered surely there's going to be backup goalkeeper come in as well. Surely
it has to be. you know.
Well, look, he has put Sinisalo on the bench a lot this year. I'm wondering why that is, you know. Is Sinisalo showing something in training?
Yeah. I mean, who knows? But certainly, a goalkeeper's certainly got to be one of the signings. I can't imagine that wouldn't be the case. You really need people don't understand. You probably need four goalkeepers around the mark in the squad. There's always going to be an injury, and then you need a backup to the backup. So there's got to be at least four there.
You look at like Coutinho, right? And like, what's Emery's thoughts on him? You know, like because if Emery sees value in him, that's another player in the squad. Like, you know,
I don't think he does, mate.
No, I know. I'm like we've covered this a lot, but I'm just giving that as an example. You know, there's players who've like we think the squad is thin, but like. And it is in some regards, but like, you know, if Carlos back, you have Kamara's missed a lot of the season. Coutinho's missed a lot of the season. So the numbers are there.
Well, you cash in on Coutinho if you can. You cash in on cash if you can. You cash in on those kind of plays and you upgrade. Now, people might say, Coutinho, oh my God, you can't upgrade on him. Yes, you can't upgrade on the best of Coutinho, but we're not going to see the best of Coutinho again.
Do you reckon he's going to cash in on Matty Cash?
Yep, I do. I said that to you guys a long
time. You've always said. I was wondering.
My rationale behind it is that he does show a lot of good flashes. He's fighting hard for the ball. He gets up the pitch, but he's finishing in terms of the chances on goal or his crossing and so forth are not up to what Emery would want. He's a Polish international. He's played a lot of Premier League games. I think sometimes you just got to say, you know what? He's been fantastic, but that's a fair bit of coin we're going to get for him.
It would take a fair bit of coin to replace him too, though.
Whilst it would, I mean, honestly, I think what we keep forgetting is I just think there's so many players around Europe that really are bargains compared to what you're going to get.
The English tax. Yeah,
I really do, mate. And look, I think we've got the right guy. He's a real continental feel. We just got to trust. I know we always say that kind of crap as football supporters. Trust in Emery or trust in whoever. But really do.
You like for me. I think you're right. There probably will be a right back coming.
I'm just going to stop you there, mate. I don't want people to think that I don't like Cash.
No one thinks that. You're just giving your opinion of where players are going to be upgraded, and that's what this podcast is for, you know. The part of me kind of thinks that maybe Young won't get a new contract. Maybe that's going to spread. Cash wants two players for each position. He said,
"Yep."
So could Cash be kept to compete with a new right back and Young be not given a new contract?
Oh, definitely. I mean, definitely. I didn't see Young. I've got to be honest with you. I don't see Young continuing at all next year. This season has been magnificent.
Yeah.
But I think you're just pushing the envelope that 1 year too far. I think for me, I feel that even when you hear Young in interviews and so forth, I think he's thoroughly enjoyed this year, knowing that's probably going to be his last. And he's looking at other avenues of what he wants to do. He's a smart cookie in terms of investments off the field. And I could see him definitely being a manager down the track as well.
Yeah. And like a lot of people talk about him being involved in the coaching setup of Villa. But to be fair, Emery didn't bring him in. Like, so that's not to say Emery's promised him any of that. You know what I mean? He might have been promised that when he first came.
Yep.
But Emery's running the football side of things now. Where I see maybe it makes sense, but Emery seems to have his coaching team. I don't see why, you know, he's going real bringing in everyone from Spain with him, like people that have worked for him for years. So I don't necessarily see Young slipping straight into the Villa coaching setup, if I'm honest, you know. But he could play football for another year, innit? So even if he doesn't get a year contract at Villa, I would imagine he'd go off playing somewhere else. He's good enough to play football. It's still for another year, you know.
He definitely is. I don't think it will be at Villa, but we keep having these great segues, mate, because we posted up a couple of days ago, in the next transfer window, we can only pick up players from one of these countries. Which do you choose? I put up Germany, Spain, Brazil and Argentina, just because I just wanted to see what people would say. And 200 votes. So thank you to everyone who voted, which is fantastic. 48% said Spain. We had 32 with Argentina, 16 with Brazil, and 4% with Germany. There was a couple of people putting comments, Messi, DePaul, Dybala, and Foyth. Yeah, that'd be awful, wouldn't it? So Argentina, he went with. That'd be a pretty ordinary summer there, wouldn't it? Imagine Messi for a laugh goes, you know what? I wouldn't fancy a season or two at Villa. God, that would be hilarious.
Yeah. he owes Martinez one as well.
Mate, wouldn't it? Honestly, it would really piss people off. It would make me even happier. You know, if Messi played a season and scored a lazy 20 goals, 10 assists at Villa, yeah, I'd be pretty happy. I'd be buying a few of those cards, I can tell you now.
Emery's probably turn him into some tactical right back or something.
Oh, absolutely. Richard Emery knows the Spanish league, so I'm hoping he can pick up another few gems like Marino. Totally agree, and I think that's why it got the 48%. Pete AVC Evans said, as long as Emery has chosen the players, I'll leave it to him. I think most of us feel that way, to be honest. And then Andrew T, underscore 1982, good year, that one. Germany is a rogue shout, considering we don't have a single German and haven't since Hilsberger. Thomas was just a fantastic player. Andrew, I just wanted to stir the pot. If you've watched, listened to this podcast or seen any tweets I put up, I love stirring shit. So I definitely put Germany in there. But I tell you what, I watch a lot of Bundesliga. It wouldn't worry me if a couple of young Germans came across the Villa.
No, there's some good players in that league, man.
Bloody good play. That's a fun league to watch, that one, I can tell you right now.
Yeah, it's even better when it gets a bit close. Like, I mean, obviously, Munich have a massive monopoly on it, but it's, this season particularly, I watch a lot of Bundesliga as well, and this season's been particularly good. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to the game tomorrow, to be honest.
That's going to be fantastic. And a lot of people will be watching, you've got, who we got? Dortmund's playing Mainz.
Dortmund are playing Mainz. Munich are playing Cologne.
And Cologne away as well. So,
that'll be interesting. Close a lot of times, but this is the first time in years that they've taken it to the last day where it's in their hands. So, if Dortmund win, they win the league. So, like, I've always had a soft spot for Dortmund because, look, we know I'm a Villa fan from my days of growing up with a lot of United fans. And I've always had a sort of, when I was a big anyone but United growing up as a kid. And I remember Dortmund, like this unfancy Dortmund team in 1997, knocked United out of the Champions League in the semi-final. And then they were the complete underdogs against Juve that had Zidane and Del Piero and all them in the Champions League final in 97. And then Dortmund scored, beat them 3-1. And yeah, Lars Ricken came off the bench to play centre-back and he scored after 16 seconds to make it 3-1. And yeah, I just really had a soft spot for Dortmund ever since then, you know.
Well, I just love the Bundesliga. It's such a great league. And I look at the bottom here at the moment. They've got a very similar thing to us at the moment. Augsburg, Stuttgart and Bochum and Schalke are all 3 points between four teams for relegation.
They have the relegation promotion playoffs.
Yes, they do. At the moment,
bottom plays third in the league. Is it?
Yes, it is. The bottom two go down, and then there's the playoff relegation, basically relegation promotion, which I absolutely love, to be honest. But some big name teams right down the bottom there as well. So, really interesting league.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it because a lot of the time the games run around the same time as the Premier League game, so I always watch them after because I watch a lot of the highlights, so it'll be nice now to be able to watch.
Well,
I'm playing for Sunday, so it'll be 9:30 for me now tomorrow night now, so I'm looking forward to watching the Dortmund game, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And being a Richmond supporter, we're both sponsored by Puma and we've copied their badge on a couple of our shirts. So
have you?
On the Richmond jacket I'm wearing tonight, it's actually, if you took the badge off and put the Dortmund badge on, it's exactly the same jersey. So, it's a bit of fun. Anyway, mate, so you're talking about the Bundesliga, but that's interesting. Any questions?
Paul, you know me, I'm a football fanatic. It doesn't really matter what I talk. I talk about any kind of football.
So am I, mate. So am I. And I've loved the Bundesliga for many, many years. So I've got to say, though, I'm bit of a traitor. I've always supported Bayern, but because of Richmond, I always had a soft spot for Dortmund because of the black and yellow. And if I started following Bayern because I was a kid and someone told me I should follow Bayern. And if I had been a bit older, I probably would have followed Dortmund because of the yellow and black. But, you know, that's life. You do what you do.
Yeah, but no, I hope that would do it, to be honest, because
I think I can't see. I really think they will, and it's been amazing because they were behind for a fair bit of the year as well. So and
they'll do it the first year they sold Erling Haaland. But anyway, back to the business of Sunday, because that's what we're here for, isn't it?
Well, we'll finish up a couple more questions, then we'll get stuck into Sunday, which we can't wait for Monday morning for a lot of us, mate. But Smithy asked another one: are we having a break at the end of the season, or are you digging? Are going to continue with the podcast through the English summer, Aussie winter. Well, the podcast will actually be, when we finish, yes, it'll be our winter, but living in Perth as you do and living in Queensland as I do, the winters are cold, but you still get so much sun. It doesn't feel the same as a lot of other countries. We're going to continue through. We're going to do some specialty podcasts. We'll put some questions up for content you want to cover. We'll be covering things like past players. We'll be doing some interviews with supporters and hopefully some supporter groups there as well, Spud. Yes. So, no, there's no way we'll finish. There'll be some exciting times of signings. There'll be overseas tours. And, you know, there's so much to talk about Villa and other related stuff as well. So we'll continue.
For the listeners as well, if there's any, when the off-season, obviously, there's going to be a lot of stuff around transfers and that. So, we like a lot of podcasts, we'll be doing stuff around transfers. So, we'll probably do a bit around transfer, but we'd like to do other stuff as well, keep a bit of variety, because most pods will be doing transfer talk. So if you have any ideas of stuff you'd like us to do, lads, and listen, don't be afraid, just send them to the Aussie Villains page and we'll make a podcast out of that, you know.
100% we will. You know, we'll put the questions up. What would you like to hear in a podcast? I'll just give you some other examples of some things planned. We'll do some of our classic matches. We'll be looking back at things like our favourite jerseys, best away trips, and if you know, it'll be very topical if we can make the Europa conference, because people will be doing away trips for the first time in over a decade. There'll be people spending away trips for the first time overseas with their sons and daughters, for example. So hopefully that reignites that kind of passion as well there. So another great question. Do you have some more questions there yourself, mate?
There was one from Omar on Facebook. A very good long-term listener. Faith contributes all the time from our own Aussie Villains Facebook page. And this one for you, Paul. So Omar says, with two out of Everton, Leeds and Leicester destined for the drop, would the signing of the likes of Wilfred Nanta, Amadou Onana or Harvey Barnes improve the Villa squad? Or will we be just solely dipping into the international market? So what he's saying is, something we've discussed before, are we going to dip into the relegation market a bit, or are we going to solely go European?
I think everyone's going to dip into any team that's relegated. It's going to have some quality from the Premier League. I can't imagine. I think there's going to be a lot of competition for a small number of players from those teams.
Yes, great point, Paul. Yeah.
So that's my concern.
Yeah. Is there anyone you'd have?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think the players that he's mentioned, I think they're certainly going to add.
And they're players we have mentioned on the pod before as like a separate as well, lads. We liked, you know.
Yeah, they're not going to hurt your squad. I mean, they're not going to have the smell of relegation on them. They're going to be hungry to, prove a point and that it wasn't their issue of going down. They did everything they could, but I think if one of them came up at a fair price, but I think there'll be a lot of teams. It's too easy. I know it sounds really silly. Everyone's going to see those players and they've played against them. And they're going to, I just think Emery's going to be looking beyond. Let's look at the unknown players. Let's look at the Marinos who people are going to take a year to figure out. You know, yes, if they come up, awesome. Love to grab one or two, but I think we're going to look beyond that. Omar, that's just my opinion.
I think James Maddison to Newcastle is probably the most obvious transfer I've seen coming in a long time, isn't it? Yeah. it's going to happen, like, you know, and he hasn't even been linked to him that much, but I think I think that's one that you can almost put your house on, couldn't you?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I can't say 100%, who knows, but yeah. I mean, 99 point something.
You'd be very surprised if that's not one. Look, you know, I've always really liked that Onana from Everton since he's came in. You know, he's made his Belgian debut this season as well. And I just think the profile of the player, he's a big lad. He's only 20. When I seen him at the Villa and Everton game, he came off the bench and he was just always a big unit. And I just think he'd be a good fit for our midfield, come in and challenge our midfield anyway. And let's be very clear, like Luiz and Kamara and McGinn, they're as good as any midfield out there, like at the moment. Like they're going to be hard to replace, like as in by players that are going to come in dislodge them, which is only going to make us stronger. We're going to buy players that are going to come in and compete with them. The benefit of buying relegation players from the Premier League is there's no settling in period, you know. You know they can adapt to the league. So I do think there is value in a couple of them. But you're right, we're definitely going to see a couple of gems from overseas as well. You see a lot of people saying that, like, we're going to hit the Spanish market hard. Yes, we probably will, but you have to remember these people that we're bringing in, like, are top level scouts, like. So they're going to have more knowledge than just Spain as well, you know?
Look, I think it's going to be, we've talked about it, I think it's going to be young players from Italy. I think there's, I still think we will look at players from Germany. There's so many young players and they're not on big money. South America.
South America is a market that's ready to be tapped into as well.
Yeah. And we've already, you know, the South American contacts we already have, and Martinez is a classic example of promoting fellow Argentinians and so forth. But, you know, I mean, let's look at Arsenal many years ago when they were doing a similar kind of build and they hit the African market and that's still untapped as well. You know, it's kind of like we've almost forgotten about going to Africa. So players are going to come from wherever our scouts see. I think this wonderful cosmopolitan league that the Premier League is, I just feel, this is my Australian aspect coming out, I feel sometimes we get so caught up in this player played, you know, for Man U and this player played for Chelsea, because Chelsea are going to get rid of a hell of a lot of players who are going to be psychologically damaged. And I don't know how much you want to look at them, because we are going to be paying a fortune for them. And we're paying overs for most of our players now anyway, let's be honest.
Yeah, well, I think just to compete at the top level now, sometimes you do have to spend a couple more million than the player's worth. That's just today's market.
It's not the transfers, bud. Yeah. This is where everyone gets caught up all the time. Everyone gets caught up in, oh, that guy's only 30 million. Oh, that guy's a free transfer.
Wages, that's, man. Yeah.
Yes, it's the wages.
Yeah. And the agent fees and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Our wages are astronomical for the standard of players we've got. Yes. That's just the truth.
Yeah. But you have to pay it if you want to compete, and it's paid off. Like, we're fighting for Europe, you know. That's the reality of it, and we're going to have to keep overpaying if we want to keep competing. And that's just a sad state of football, like, you know.
It is, mate. But let's get into it. We've been talking about Europe. We're all fired up. We qualify for Europe if we match. We match Tottenham. And we're in Europe. That's as simple as it is. And Brentford.
We have to.
So right now, if we match those two teams, Brentford win and we draw, Brentford will go ahead on goal difference. And they have a team who, yes, everyone says they might park, you know, they might just chill out. They have got so many players playing for potentially for an FA Cup spot, for a Champions League spot. Their second squad and even third squad's probably as good as anyone in the comp. There's no way on God's earth Man City are going to let Brentford just walk over them. Yeah. So make no mistake there. They're not playing for anything, but the players are playing for everything. So the players aren't going to lie down. We play Brighton, which we'll come to in a moment. And Tottenham, who do they play, mate?
Yeah. it's so torn. Like, Leeds, this is it. That relegation battle, sorry, before we get into the point, that relegation battle is mental, isn't it?
It's doing my head in. I mean, honestly, Leeds must win. I mean, really, their goal difference is minus 27. So they have to beat Tottenham. And Ellen Road is just going to go absolutely off its nut on Monday morning, isn't it? I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they're playing Tottenham at Ellen Road. Leicester themselves have West Ham, and West Ham Look, they might be a team who lays down. You know, you don't
they've
know.
They've got a final to prepare for, though, man. There's going to be they've got the Conference League final to prepare for. So you don't know what you're going to get from them either. They're going to rest players. There's absolutely no doubt about that. They're going to rest players. But are the players that are going to come in, are they the ones, like, if you're resting Antonio and Danny Ings is starting, Danny Ings is going to want to play in that final.
But yeah, and that's the same kind of thing I was saying about
City. Same
as City. And obviously, we have Brighton. So let's look at that. Before we look at Brighton, so basically what we're saying here is Tottenham have to beat Leeds at Elland Road, and Leeds have everything to play for. They have survival to play for. Brentford taking on City. City are not going to lie down. If anything, I think Brentford could get a point. I don't think City are going to let themselves be beaten. That's just my opinion. And look, it's all on our plate, isn't it? We're playing at home. We're playing a team who I have thoroughly enjoyed watching, and they are going to be extraordinarily hard to beat. But once again, something that does go in our favour is they have nothing else to play for now, because they are in the Europa League.
I kind of agree as well, and I kind of disagree, but like, they've nothing to lose either. Like, they can come out and enjoy the day, like, and that can be tricky as well.
Yeah, it can be. The fourth most goals, they've scored the fourth most equal goals in the whole competition.
And their performance against Man City the other night, that first half of football, wow. Yeah. I'll be honest, no, I didn't watch it live because I was going to work at the time, but a friend of mine, big United fan, texted me and he says, did you see Brighton's performance in that first half? Make sure you watch it tonight. And I come home and I watched that. Wow, the man, they played some football in that first half. No, they had something to play for as well, don't get me wrong, you know. Look, man, I don't begrudge Brighton a place in that European all, man. I've enjoyed watching them play football all year. If Villa aren't on, I watch the Brighton games, because then they're a joy to watch. The way they play football, they really are a pleasure, and it is probably a good thing for us that they are going in Sunday with nothing to play for. But I still think that they pose a huge threat.
Well, the three teams that have been, of course they do, absolutely they do. The three teams that have been the most fun for me to watch this year, obviously City, because I've watching Haaland score more goals than most other teams has been amazing. He's only scored one less goal than Chelsea in the Premier League. He has scored one less goal. I was spewing. I said to Dad when I said to my old man, we speak every morning on my way to work, and Dad gives me the updates as I'm driving. He's like, Chelsea just got a goal. And I'm like, oh, you're kidding me. I didn't want him to, because I was actually having a fight between Haaland and Chelsea myself. I've been watching that for the last few weeks, going, can Chelsea outscore Haaland?
I didn't notice that. That's hilarious.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? But the three teams I've actually thoroughly enjoyed watching their style of play has obviously been Man City, Arsenal. I've really actually enjoyed the way they've played, except against us and Arsenal TV. And I mean, Newcastle at times as well, I really enjoyed, but definitely Brighton played some of the most electric football of any team this year. Yeah. So, you know, it is everything that you could hope for on the final day of a season. You are playing for something. You, as the 12th man in the stands and at home, but especially in the stands, you have a chance to help lift those boys a percent or two. You have the chance to bring home Europe with that squad.
This is the kind of game. You know, we've watched games before, but Paul, where we've said, oh, it's actually a good thing that we're away, because if we score early against this team, their fans will get on the back. This is a game that you want to be at home for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, do you know, they're like this when things are going well, because Villa Park is going to be absolutely bouncing Sunday. Like, it's just, you love to be there. Like, if we can go out and get an early goal, just can you imagine that place? Like, just.
We'll go into that in a moment. We better do what we always do, mate.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go our back view. I mean, we know the keeper's going to be Martinez, right?
This has got harder, Paul, by the way, like, from his selection last week.
Oh, yeah.
The last two or three weeks, we were able to comfortably say, oh, it's going to be the back five. We got it wrong. The odd player here and there wrong. His selection last week has made this harder, like, do you know? I think we know Luca Dean's probably going to start left back because Moreno is injured. Like, so
yeah,
Look at Dean starts. I think Matty Cash does start again. I thought he was very good last week.
Yeah, I agree.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually.
The only thing that might swing it in Young's favour, and I think this might actually come into play later on in the game. I think we will see him actually come on at some point if he doesn't start. But his experience in that pressure kind of situation, like, you know, if we are 1-0 up, not 1-0 up against Liverpool like we were last week, 1-0 up against Brighton, where we need to see this game out to guarantee Europe, like, I think there'll be a couple of players get pretty nervy, you know, they haven't been in this situation. So I do think we'll see Young at some point. He may start. I think Cash will start, but I wouldn't be wholeheartedly shocked if Young starts. But I do think Cash will. But we'll definitely see Young at some point.
Yeah, no, look, we'll see him at some point. I actually think... I think, I'm going to go with Young. I think he might start Young.
Look, I think Cash will because of what he did last week and because of Brighton's pace on the wings. But... again, I wouldn't look at that lineup and go, oh, no, Young is in. Like last week, I looked, oh, Cash is in. But I think Cash was that. But again, I think it possibly could be Young as well. So I'm going to stick with Cash. Right.
What about them? This is a tougher one, mate. The middle four this week. Well, we haven't even, we know Mings and Konsa, sorry.
It's going to be Mings and Konsa, yeah. The middle four, yeah. Look, it'll be Kamara and Luiz in midfield. It'll be JJ on the left. He was very good last week. And this is a game that's going to suit him where we're going to be playing a lot in the counter. And then it's like McGinn is going to play, but is he going to play on the right or is he going to play as the number 10?
I think he's going to play on the right. I think he's going to play on the right.
Yeah.
And then I think we're going to have Watkins and Buendia.
I was just going to say the same thing.
I just think we need Buendia's like enterprise. I think we need him buzzing around. I just don't think we can afford. And I know that Bailey's done some great things and almost scored again and helped realistically get the ball to the position where we scored a brilliant goal last week. But I think just because of the pressure, I think it has to be Buendia supporting Watkins up front.
That's what I'd imagine he'll be going with. Yeah, I think it'll be McGinn, Ramsey, Kamara, and Louise in the middle, and Buendia and Watkins up top.
How fast do you think Kamara is? I just want to ask you for a reason. Do you think he's more of a positional player than pace? There's a reason I ask you that.
I think he's quicker than we realise because that goal of Bailey scored against Leeds. When he had to put the burners on, he was able to. Positionally, like his definitely brain is definitely his top kind of thing. But I think he's quick enough. Yeah.
The only reason I said that is, and I know it won't happen in a game, it's important. I could see Kamara being pushed forward behind a player like Watkins one day, just in a different game next year, perhaps, completely surprising people again. It's the kind of thing I think we're going to see from Emery, not just Kamara doing that, but so many players doing things that we go, oh, I didn't know he could do that. I think he'll do something different. And I don't know, not in this game.
I think Kamara and Luiz, yeah, probably not this game because they don't have the stuff to put in behind them if they push him forward. They don't have a composite plan behind them if they push. But I think Luiz definitely, you could play Luiz as a 10, and definitely. You really could, like, and you wouldn't because of his what he can do in the middle. But I think Kamara, we forget how good Kamara is too because he's missed so much of this season. Like, but he strikes me as a player again. You could probably put anywhere and get a job out of him. Like, he's a very intelligent footballer. Like, his best position is clearly, obviously, the part of the pivot, you know. But
what I've really enjoyed this year, mate, is seeing the numbers grow. So, for example, Ramsey has five assists and six goals, and Louise has Ramsey has five assists and six goals, and Louise has six assists and five goals. I'm just loving seeing that variation from our midfield. McGinn, three assists and a goal now, and that's danger. I mean, Bailey when I had a walk this morning, I was going, how has Bailey actually gone in terms of what he's done with limited time? He's actually got 4 goals, 4 assists. So it's really starting to build, isn't it?
It's building, but it needs to get higher. But you're right, to be fair, their numbers have grown as well a lot in the time that Emery has been there.
Almost exclusively since then, so
it's almost been a half a season. So I can understand why your top numbers are. That's a good show, because I think it's going to keep growing up, Paul, because Emery's putting a plan in place to get the best of these players, you know. It's not just your magic or whatever, not the kind of phrase, but, you know, there's a composite plan every time. And you can see Luiz is tasked with getting in the box more than he ever was under any time as a Villa player.
Well, we're not always stat-driven, but sometimes I go behind my thoughts and go, well, do the stats actually back up what I'm saying? And between Luiz, Ramsey and Bailey, 15 goals, 15 assists.
Yeah, it's not bad for a team that struggled bad. It needs to improve, going forward over a whole season, but it's still good for the time that, when you consider how bad we were up to November, you know.
But go and actually have a look and add it up, and I was really shocked. I went, equal goals, equal assists between those three. And no, it's not good. Bad. And
you can see it, Paul. How many goals have we scored? We it's happened a lot of them, but we'll take Luiz and Ramsey in as the example, because I think they're the best example. How many goals have we scored where one of them have started the move but then finished it? Luiz picks the ball up deep and then he's the one getting on the end of the pullback. Ramsey's done it many a time.
Well, that's what made me so happy with that goal on the weekend against Liverpool, because it was a recycled ball. So Bailey got into the box, tried to do a couple things, didn't quite work. They half cleared it. Luiz gets it, curls it unbelievably, but Ramsey's run. And I didn't even really hear people talk about this. His finish was great, but you should see the run. As soon as he saw it was going out to Luiz, he bolted. He knew exactly what was coming. They would have done it on the training track a million times.
It's spatial intelligence, man. It's spatial intelligence, just unreal. And take Luiz, man. That ball, I don't think he got enough credit for that ball. Lord, that ball was sensational.
Could not be defended. You know
the thing as well, I think it gets lost as well, because the goal is so good. Luiz's determination in the first place, winning the two headers to get the ball back.
Yes.
Probably the thing that impressed me the most since Emery took over, Paul, because everyone talks about how good he is tactically, structurally, and all that is true. His bravery in getting men into the box. We always, on an attack, flood the box.
How many years, Spud, have we had to watch one player be by themselves and we lose the ball and we still look like we're outnumbered when the ball's coming back?
It's probably one of the best evolutions I've seen from us in a long time, where we scored a lot of goals from those cutbacks now, where there's two or three options as well. Really good. Everything is going smoothly. I'd love to see a good start to next season, because where can it take us then? If we can get off to a really good start, you know. Paul, if we don't make Europe, I mean, I'd be disappointed, but I won't be gutted.
And you won't see any stupid comments from me about it, because it's been a marvellous ride this season. Since the 13th game of the year, really, it's been just magnificent. We've had two-thirds of a great season. Let's just quickly get back to the Brighton game for a moment. I'm the same as you. I definitely will not be disappointed in what I've seen this season, right? Yeah. Because I see what's happening going forward, and that's the exciting bit. I'm a bit worried about Monday morning, Sunday night's game, of what I've seen in recent weeks. I understand holding the ball and moving it round the way we have, but we cannot afford to invite the pressure of Brighton onto us. And there was a couple of signs in the second half against Liverpool where we really held it too long and probably put ourselves under unnecessary pressure. So, yes, we've got the instructions and what we want to do, but we do that too much on Monday morning. I reckon we're in big trouble. Brighton are going to come full at us. I wouldn't be surprised if the instructions on Monday morning change. I wouldn't be surprised if he says, you know what, if you don't have the first option, the ball's out. I don't think he's that ironclad where he can't see what's happening, if you know what I mean.
Well, he's done it before against Newcastle, sure.
Yes.
He's seen that Newcastle's press was just really strong. So
they're gonna push, mate, very, very hard. They're gonna know that we're gonna try and hold the ball. And I think that will be where he says, okay, we've got to do something different.
I think you're going to see a lot of the diagonal balls that we've seen against Newcastle, yeah, from Martinez to the fullbacks. I think they're going to want to invite that press, Paul. You know, I think we're going to see very, very quick attacks, you know, where we're going to see big...
Yeah, that's true. I worry about someone like Matoma or someone coming onto us, so putting the pressure on.
Oh, man, if 100%. Because Brighton can press, man. They're so clever. Like, you watch their triggers, like, so as soon... Like, they... Because you know, sometimes when you're podcasting and you're reviewing it, we forget to review, like, we talk about what the Villa are going to do tactically. Like, De Zerbi's a good tactical manager too. Like, he's going to pick the bones out of Villa too as well. Like, he strikes me as a guy either who won't let them be on the beach. Like, you know, he'll want to finish the season on style. Like,
they're right and left backs. I was looking at where their danger comes from, and they are such a quick, responsive team. We're going to have to be careful. You said about us flooding the box, and we'll continue to do that. But they've got two players between them, 12 assists and 10 goals from their right and left back. Yeah, that's unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
Estupinian, is it? The Ecuadorian.
Yes. He's got five assists and a goal, and Pascal Gross has got seven assists and nine goals. Nine goals.
Yeah. And then
I had to check a few different sites to make sure I was actually seeing it right.
Amazing,
and there you go, he's a German as well. There we go. And so what I was thinking is, I know it sounds really silly. Does McGinn almost man mark him? I just worry because that's where they get so many of their goals from.
Yeah, it's tricky, like, because it's hard to know because Estupinian.
I thought I was reading wrong, mate. I thought their danger comes from the back. And when I saw their stats, I was just blown away.
What's the stats there, sorry?
Well, Pascal Gross has got seven assists, nine goals.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
I must be wrong.
No, I think you're right because a lot of their stuff does come through them. Like.
And so I just wonder, mate, what kind of tactic, you know, we might put in there. Do we close him down? Do we have someone almost sitting in the channel that's like, right, I'm not going to push too far forward. I'm watching that man. So, yes, I'm not going to mark up on him, you know, right up top, but I'm going to be at the midway. He's not getting past me because he really does. They are fabulous players.
It's when you think about it, though, too, it's probably actually a little bit of a pity because I know Lucas Digne actually played really well against Liverpool. It was a shame he had to go off because he was actually playing really well.
Yeah.
When you look at, like, Pascal Gross, they're knowing how high up he's. Like, I didn't even think of this Ireland. We're doing a review. Mourinho would be a bit of a loss, though, because Mourinho could play so high up the pitch. You can't pin him back a bit. Like, you're going that gets a bit lost. They're going to be invited on a bit more with Luka Dean. Like,
yeah, that's where I was going to come from. We lose that where Gross would have to be more accountable, and that to me was a massive loss.
Yeah. I think, but Digne is probably a better defender than Mourinho overall, as in, like, from a defensive point of view.
Oh, definitely from a defensive point, no doubt.
Yeah, so...
But he doesn't...
The only thing I will say, though, is Luka Digne is really good at crossing from deep.
Yep.
So if you've got... Like, most teams play with one fullback that pushes up. We do it ourselves. But Brighton actually play with two fullbacks that push up.
Yes, they do.
Liverpool do. And that leaves a lot of space in behind. So... yeah, it's really interesting tactical battle, isn't it? Like, because even against Newcastle, when we pushed our two fullbacks a bit further up into the halfway line, remember when they'd done such a good job on Kieran Trippier, remember?
Yeah.
And but, like, the Brighton fullbacks play even higher than them.
Yeah, I think that's what's made them so attractive. It's an oxymoron here or counterintuitive. There's going to be plenty of chances in this game for both sides. It's definitely going to be chance non-stop chances, right? But I think it's only going to be a 1-0 game. And I think it will be a long ball over the top. I'm not even going to go with a silly prediction here. He's going to, Watkins is just going to skip around, slide it into the back of the net from about 12 out. I think it's going to come from a long ball from the back. And I actually think it'll be Kamara who's going to put the diagonal ball on. Watkins is going to run past them, get past the keeper and score the only goal of the game.
Would I be right in saying that Watkins, I'm just going to check this. Would I be right in saying Watkins still hasn't broken his... Is he still stuck on the 14 goals that like to match his record? He hasn't scored since, has he?
No, he hasn't. No.
Big game for him, isn't it?
I think he'll score the winner.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are bagging him for that penalty, right? People miss penalties. It wasn't a great penalty. We don't have great penalty takers. And it was a bad miss, but he was always aiming for that. He was aiming for that spot where the keeper wouldn't have stopped it. And people are saying it cost us the win. Well, it didn't because it happened.
Yeah.
You're not guaranteed the second goal. We scored
it. No, it changes the complete trajectory. Now, it's easy for me to say from the coach, like when I don't have 40,000 scouts screaming vitriol at me, right? But honestly, man, I don't think there's any excuse for a professional footballer not to target. Like if a keeper saves it, then that's fair enough. But you shouldn't be putting wide from 12 yards a striker. Personally, that's just my opinion. And if you're like confidence can get to anyone, but like Watkins isn't a fantastic penalty taker. Like so, why is he on the penalties? That's me personally. And people might say that's easy to say after the event, but it's not after the event. He's missed a lot of like. Good few penalties in his career. Like we were talking about who in the group chat, our own private group chat, like when myself and Rhino were saying, who do you put on him, you know?
Yep.
For me, it would probably be Douglas Luiz. He's cool as a cucumber, that fella. Like he doesn't strike me as a guy the pressure is gonna get there.
For me it was a guilt edged kind of one, right? Because I would have had Luiz take it, right? I might have even had Kamara take a penalty instead of Watkins. But you're also then saying to your striker, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because a striker kind of deserves the right to take the penalty.
I think you're 110 right. You want your striker taking them. Like, I don't think it was a bad decision for him to take them. I just don't think he should be the penalty taker. And I'm not just saying this after the miss that time.
No, he never
looks confident taking penalty. Even the ones he scores, he never looks confident, you know? That's just, and when Danny Lee was at the club, he wasn't the penalty taker anymore.
He reminds me of a lot of it. And please don't think I'm putting down the Australian game. Australia is one of the only countries in the world that has four professional football codes. We have rugby league, we have rugby union, AFL, and the world game. One of the only countries in the world who has four football codes, if not the only country, right? So we only have 20-odd million people. We are so spread in our sporting. You know, we play basketball with players playing NBA. We've got players playing all over the world in football. We've got indigenous sport in the AFL. So what I'm trying to say is our talent is split everywhere, right? And one of the things that we're really great at is being athletes. But you'll notice there hasn't been many Australians in the history of world football that have been prolific strikers. Even one of our greatest ever strikers, Mark Viduka, was not prolific at the national level. So I suppose the point I'm trying to make here is that with Watkins, he seems more of a sea ball, hit ball. I don't think he's the most highly skilled striker we've ever seen. So the penalty side of it shows that aspect up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think most penalty takers have to be confident, and Watkins is more of a, as you say, Watkins is really good when he doesn't have to think about it. Like when Watkins was on that run though, you know, where he scored 10 goals in 12 games or 12 goals in 10 games, whatever it was, you'd put your house in him to score then because that's the kind of player he is when things are going well. But
yep,
he's going to score. And I don't want to put him on because he had a great season, and I really do hope he scores the winner Sunday, to be honest, because to get past that 14 goals on the last day would be fantastic. Well, and he's been very good. And without his goals, we wouldn't be in this position. No, let's not kid ourselves.
And without his work, right? He's been able to be more Watkins than running around, chasing everyone, using all his energy up like he did early in the year, where he just had to completely be the one-man show trying to close people down. So, mate, I've given my score line. I didn't even give a silly response. That's how, you know, seriously I'm taking
so part of this game is.
I didn't even want to try and do it. So I do believe it'll be a diagonal ball over the top. Watkins runs on, gets around the keeper, slots it home for the winner. But it's going to be really early on. It's not going to be a late goal. It's going to be early on, and there's going to be chances galore missed by both teams.
Oh, just before I give my score, can I just say one thing? That I don't typically get nervous like watching football games, like unless there's a lot on it, you know. And the last time I was really, really nervous watching a game wasn't the playoff final, because I kind of expected us to win that playoff final, but it was the last day of the season against West Ham when we had to get a point to stay up.
Oh,
and I was really nervous watching that game, man, and I was just I was quite sure the whole game. I was sitting there just struggling forward.
I'm feeling sick thinking about it, mate. Yeah, I feel awful.
And honestly, man, because we've never been here nor there the last few seasons. I wouldn't say I was as nervous as that the other day watching the Liverpool game, but it's been the most nervous I've been watching a game since that. I was getting butterfly while that game. We were 1-0 up and things were getting laid and Liverpool was starting to put the pressure on, and I knew how important it was for Europe. I'd tell you, it was a gilt-edged game. So I'm hoping I don't have to go through that again this Sunday. But
Well, the good news is, Spud, like, honestly, the 3 points against Tottenham and then that absolutely vital point against Liverpool, it put us equal on goal difference with Tottenham, for example. It was just so vital because it means it is completely on our feet and our heads.
And Emery's been saying with 6 weeks, he'd love to go into the last day against Brighton with it in our own hands.
A couple of weeks ago, the loss to United, the loss to Wolves, we thought it was gone. A lot of us thought it was gone. And then we beat Tottenham, and I think we beat Tottenham really well. And a brilliant, 60 minutes against Liverpool and backs to the wall. It's in our hands. That's all you can ask.
And look, if they fail to get us over the line, I won't see it as a failure. I'll see it as a huge stepping stone, and I can't.
I'll see it as, it's been a brilliant ride, and it'll be a lost opportunity. That's what I would see a loss, a draw, and a fighting draw, and we miss out. Fine, we missed out, but a win, and then we just say, you know what, we didn't have to rely on anything else, because I tell you what, that Tottenham Leeds game. My God. I mean, I know Brentford's got their chance as well, but I'm just talking about that game, what an impact that has on two clubs.
Oh, unreal, man, yeah. And just to touch on our game before I say about that, I won't be really annoyed. The only thing that would annoy me about our game is if we don't put our best foot forward. If we lost, but really played bad.
I can't see it either. I can see us losing, but not in that fashion, and I don't think you can either.
No, and that'll bring me back to my score, mate. And I'm going to go 2-1 Villa, and it's going to be Tyrone Mings from a set piece early. They're going to score because Brighton will score for me, and then I think Ollie Watkins is going to score a late goal.
Oh, we both agree that Watkins is the match winner. Oh, he deserves it, mate. He deserves it.
Yeah, I'd love to see it, and I think Tyrone Mings would deserve it too. Just the season he's had, and it's just going to be ruptures, and man, the celebrations of Villa Park are just going to be just unreal.
Well, we need to touch on the players' player of the year.
Yes,
Dougie Luiz.
Yeah, well deserved. No question. He was the players' player of the year and the fans' player of the year. He won the double.
So we just wanted to, special mention there, and I thought absolutely lovely. Just gone blank. Our goalkeeper Steer, a lovely, lovely tribute to his time at the club as well.
Absolutely, and it's good that the club marked that. And you could not. He was so significant in our most recent history. By the way, 5 years ago today,
yes,
the day May 26th, I flew home for the playoff final against Fulham, where we lost 1-0. I was sitting in Wembley, absolutely couldn't believe that I'd flown home to see us lose the playoff final. But who would have known it would have been the best loss of the last decade for us?
And
at the time, I didn't feel like that now after flying from Australia for the playoff final. But I picked the wrong cup final. I picked the wrong playoff final, but against Fulham. But also, the main thing, 1982, 26th of May.
Yes.
It's Rotterdam Day.
It certainly is. And I was going to bring that up as well. I'm not sure exactly how old you are. I was 9 years old. It was only probably my second year of following Villa. I didn't even know we'd won it. As I said, I was nine. It wasn't big coverage back here in Australia at that point in time. It was on Channel Zero, which has become SBS.
I wasn't even born, Pat. I was born in 1985.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying to you. and because my parents, my dad follows all sport around the world, but he wasn't really into the world game at that point in time in his life. Yeah. My dad would have been 31 and, brought up playing cricket in summer and Aussie rules in winter. But my old man, he's a villain through and through. So I want to say I helped get my old man as a villain. And he'll say, oh, I know nothing about the club. I can promise you this. He'd know more than most people would know because the guy just lives sport. So people like my old man, keep getting your friends involved. Get your relatives involved, Aussies, because they will grab a club because that's the way we are in Australia. Someone says, who do you follow? You'll go, oh, okay, I'll follow this team. So get your mates involved. I guarantee if they haven't got a club and they come to a Villa game at a pub around Australia with you, they're going to be a villain. So do that.
Absolutely, 100%.
And to all the supporter groups around the country who do a marvellous job, and many of them we know or have been supporters of us as well, look up your local club in WA or Queensland or wherever you are, because you're gonna go to a pub, you'll know no one, you'll see them wearing Villa shirts, and I'll guarantee they'll invite you in. We had someone on one of our questions there, mate. I'll just go back to it for a second because I just want to bring him up. It wasn't so much a question. Well, it was. This is from James Thomas. So JT602, where are you guys based? Recently moved to Sydney. So James, reach out, get online. We'll retweet you as well. I'll put a quote tweet out there for anyone in Sydney. To give the details to James. So I'm sure James, he's only new to Sydney, he's a villain. I'm sure he'd want to know where he can go and support his club as well.
Yeah, and Sydney better do a great job. I think Bradley Turner was the guy's name there, and I think they go to Cheers Bar. I think they go to Cheers Bar for all the games. So get in touch. Cheers Bar is, I think, a lot of supporters' clubs goes there for the games. I think they show all the games. So, definitely. Thanks for getting in touch as well, James. I answered the question actually on Twitter earlier, and I was thinking after I should have actually kept it for the pod. Thank you very much for getting in touch, and I hope you listen to the pod, and I hope you enjoy your time in Australia because it's a great country, Matt, and the beauty of it, you'll get to watch every game.
Yeah, so I've just quote tweeted him out there, and I've just put out there, New South Wales supporters, give James a shout-out and cheers bar anyone. So hopefully people get in contact with him there because it is a growing community. I think the trip that they did pre-season, they could have done a better job for supporters, but the trip they did, we all met in Brisbane, mate, for that game. And there'll be lifelong friendships that come out of those trips.
Right, Paul, before you go, I'm going to put you right in the spot now. Relegation, two of the three, who's going down? Who's staying up? You've got Everton, Leicester and Leeds. Only one of them is staying up. Who's going to stay up?
Everton.
Oh, I think so too. I think Everton will beat Bournemouth at Goodison. If Everton win, it doesn't matter what any of the rest of them do.
No, that's what pointed me in that. And they're playing Bournemouth. They're at home. The home crowd really, really, really has been lifting them. I think they'll do enough.
I grew up in a household where where my father was a scouser, massive Everton fan. Like, before he moved over to Ireland, he was obviously season ticket holder at Goodison Park for years. All his family are at Everton. And yeah, just, I know. Well,
a point for them at home is going to be enough, you'd think, because Leeds, unless a point, Leeds would have to beat Tottenham 4-0.
Yeah.
So I think a point at home at Goodison will be enough. So
can I just say, though, I do actually think Leeds are going to beat Spurs, though. I actually think they will win Elland Road, because I think Spurs are gone so bad at the moment and that place will be bouncing, but I just don't think it's going to be enough for them. Will Leicester get anything off of West Ham? What do Leicester have to do if Leeds win?
Here's the result. If Leeds and Leicester both win, Tottenham would have to... if Tottenham get a draw... they'll go down. If Tottenham get a draw and Leicester win, Everton will join Leeds down because of goal difference. So Leicester's goal difference is minus 18. Everton's is minus 24. If Everton get a point and Leicester get a lead, that's why you heard my pause before, because I had this sneaky feeling Leicester's going to survive, and I just went, oh.
Well, two of them survived, though. Leicester, like, there's only one, there's two of the three going down, isn't there?
Yeah.
So Southampton are down, and then it's a toss-up between Leeds, Everton, and Leicester.
If Leicester win, Everton must win because of the goal difference. Everton can't even get a draw.
No, that's right, yeah. Everton have to win to guarantee.
Yeah, so that's where I was a bit, I mean, if you heard my pause was, well, just a goal difference, and Leicester's at home, and Leicester's playing West Ham, who... Yes, they've got players who are going to want to play in the final. But by the same token, you know, if Leicester score the first goal, how much fight are West Ham really going to be putting in?
Yeah. See, like, it comes back to the point as well. We were talking about Man City earlier, and I think they'd be a bit more professional. But, players are going to be fighting for their place. But there's also going to be players who don't want to get injured because the finals are coming up.
If you saw the squad the other day, it was almost Manchester City's second squad. I mean, and there's no way I cannot see Brentford beating City. It could be a draw. I could see that happening. I just don't think they'll be. I think there's a lot of pride there as well. You don't want to go out in your last game of the year.
Who's home between Brentford and Man City?
Brentford.
Yeah, the place will be bouncing. Oh, look, at the end of the day, Villa just have to go out and win.
We win. Nothing else matters, buddy. It's a bit of a thing.
I'm actually confident we will win.
Well, let's do it. I'm not confident because we're getting rid of that kind of the villainous. You know, the Villa bad luck, the Villa this, the Villa that. Emery's given us a little bit of that. You know, we've been able to get rid of a lot of that. So, look. This has been the Aussie Villains podcast. It's been Spud and Paul. Look, you've heard this whole podcast. You know how nervous we are. You know how much we love the club as you do. Please follow us at Aussie Villains. Also, Australian Fans of Villa on Facebook and Twitter. We would love listeners, if you listen on Spotify or Apple or Google, Anchor, anywhere you listen, we really would appreciate, even if it's one line review, please do give us a review. It'll help us get our reach out there. We don't get paid or anything for this. This is a Friday night, 11 o'clock for me, 9 o'clock for Spud. We do it because we love the club, but also we do it because we love you guys and the feedback and everything that you give us. I tell you what, Friday, you know, a little bit of treatment, a bit of work, seeing the kids and family, and you know, Spud's got a young family. We do this because we love the club. You know, we've got good heads for podcasting. Spud, any final words there, mate?
Yeah, I just want to say thanks again to the listeners for sending in the questions. It's just I really enjoyed that segment where the listeners and
I bloody love that section. That is my favorite part.
And I think that Tess and Paul are Tess and Ryan are the exact same. They love that side as well because it's a bit of spontaneity. Like, just want to say Sunday, those of you lucky enough to go to the game, just enjoy it and get behind the team.
Because the 12th man.
Do not sit there and just be a spectator. Go there and be a fan because it makes a difference to those players. And what I would give to be at that game. So if you do have the honor of being at that game, give it your all. Just one game. Just give everything.
And we know you will.
Over the line. We know you will. And up the Villa. That's all I can say. Up the Villa.
Oh, yeah. Normally, I'm more excited with my up the Villa. I think I'm just tired thinking about the permutations, the bottom, yeah. Us, and everything else. So.
It's so weird that after 38 games, like a season that was so different between the first half and the second half, it's just come down to this one game. And I wouldn't want it any other way. If we get Europe, what an unbelievable turnaround of the season. Just unbelievable.
I don't care what level of Europe it is, mate. I know that's going to be the Europa Conference if we make it. It's the stepping stone we need. It's right. Europe again.
Some of the grounds
that our away supporters are going to see, it's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing for some people.
100%. I know I'll be getting the passport out anyway, ready to go if we get there. I'll definitely be going to one European game if we get there, even if it is, as they said on Twitter, Lithuania on a Thursday night. Bring it on.
Do it. This has been the Aussie Villains podcast. We'll speak to you hopefully next week with just the beautiful excitement of that last day and talking about even the teams that have been relegated and the ramifications for them as well. For any supporters who listen from any other club, if you're crazy enough to listen to this, good luck if your team's got something to play for. Okay, good luck. And I mean that. Speak to you next week. Cheers, mate. That was bloody good for two of us to hold that fort for that long, mate. So edit it in the morning, get it out. Perfect time for the weekend for people to listen over a couple of days.
Really enjoyed it, pal. Thanks, mate. Thanks for
enjoy, mate. I know you're working tomorrow, yeah?
Yeah, I'm only like from 6:30 to 12:30.
Oh, Jesus.
A bit of family time. See my kids. I haven't seen them all week.
Get out of here, mate. Okay, bud. Speak to you soon.
See you, buddy. Take
care. See you, mate. Thanks for joining us for another Aussie Villains podcast. Yes, it's coming up to the final game of the year, so it is the final countdown. But we will be doing postseason podcasts with special guests, covering a few favourite Villa topics as well. You can get us at Aussie Villains on Twitter. Get us at Australian Fans of Villa on Facebook and our Facebook group. We would love your reviews. You've been a vital part of this podcast this year. So if you can get on Google, on Anchor, Apple, Spotify, however you listen to the podcast, your feedback would really help us and we'd really appreciate it. As always, up the Villa!